new mystery awaits you, Guardian. Welcome to the season of opulence.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 120 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We are here with a fantastic episode for you. This week, we're going to talk about Season of the Opulence. We finally got a really, really great big info dump from Bungie. Unfortunately, they said no Vidoc this time around, which is a bummer. I was going back and watching a lot of the old Vidocs on YouTube earlier this week, and it was a treat. So it was disappointing to hear that we're not going to have one. But what they did do is basically put up an entire Season of Opulence webpage on Bungie.net. We're going to be talking about some new weapons, some new armor, some new activities, a new raid, just a whole host of new stuff. And really, honestly, I'm excited about it. For the first time in a while, I was saying to Kutch, I'm actually taking the day off for release, and I am stoked. I am ready for that. But first, let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing tonight, Kit?
Mercules, back to feeling wonderful, to be honest with you. I had a lot of fun playing some Destiny today. Dove into some Gambit, some Crucible, and I'm ready to talk about the Season of Opulence and what it has in store for us, at least what we know so far. Still looking forward to more to come next week. But we've got some good info right now. Excited about that. How about you?
I'm doing pretty great myself. Obviously, just been, you know, working a ton, as I do, but I found some time to play some Destiny tonight, so I put in a couple hours, played some multiplayer. It was a mixed bag, as it is at this point in time. I mean, the population is not tremendously high, so, you know, you run some really fun games. I was actually playing with Iron Marcus. I'm sure you guys in the Discord know who he is, but we played a couple games where I was trying not to use my gun if I could help it. I was just using a Sunbreaker Titan with Heart of Inmost Light, so I was basically just using my melees, which would then charge my one-hit stickies, and using that. And unfortunately, the first game, that went really well. The second game, it went pretty well, and then the third and fourth games did not go very well at all. So, like I said, mixed bag, ran into a couple of Not Forgottens, a six stack, you know, the usual, but it has not diminished my enthusiasm for what I believe is upcoming next week.
Yeah, I had some similar experiences in the Crucible today. It was very, very sweaty for me. Had some good games. Had some good games that I lost anyway, but still played well and felt good about them. And had some games where it was just a stomp fest. And it was just like trying to cap zones and trying to do something to keep the game alive. Probably should have sat back and let the mercy happen, but I didn't. So very sweaty in PvP, but the good news is, at least for me, Gambit has felt really fun. Solo queuing Gambit has felt much easier, actually. I think a lot of the four stacks that we're running in Gambit have kind of moved on, and so it feels good right now. The invades are still a lot. There was a burn that went on for a while. A lot longer than it should have, but can't complain. Gambit Prime has been fun. Regular Gambit's been fun. So there's still stuff to do, and I still have quests that I'm like, oh, I should probably do these, given Opulence is almost here. So
yep, I went through and I collected a bunch of the Black Armory stuff last week. I finally went ahead and got Jotun, tested it out in PvP, and it is everything I expected it to be, pretty much. Got finished up Izanagi's Burden, got the Shattered Throne done again, got the Shattered Throne ship, which was very nice. I know some people are still hunting for that one. You know, I'm finishing up my quest as well. I'm finally getting started on those Invitations of the Nine. I really, really dislike the, if you miss a week, you are then a week behind and you have to wait another extra week to do it type process that they've got there. I really wish they would stack to where if you missed a week, the next time you came back, you had 2 weeks or something like that. But they don't, so I'm finally trying to get around to those, finished up my Legion quest, stuff like that. Honestly, I can tell you the truth, I haven't even played Gambit since I tried Gambit Prime and beating a Season of the Drifter. It just, Gambit Prime was a little much for me, and I went hard on it the first little bit, and it just totally burnt me out. And the fact that there's like two versions of Gambit to play now, I've pretty much stayed away from him, and now if I'm not playing a quest specifically to get something finished, I'm pretty much in the Crucible just testing what I guess are now being called dad loadouts. I'm not sure where that came from. It may have been that post on Reddit a while ago that was like what your weapon choice says to you, but I think it's been more adapted to insultingly refer to people who are using decent guns but not meta guns. So I'm not sure if that's 100% accurate. If you know what a dad loadout is, please enlighten me. I believe that originally it was like Arentol Blast Furnace or something like that, or Arentol Bygones maybe. I don't know. I'm not really sure how that is a dad loadout, but I've been hearing it bandied around quite a bit. I've been seeing it used as kind of a disparaging term, which is interesting to see the other side of the coin, where usually meta whore is the disparaging term, and now apparently playing off meta is something equally frowned upon. So I'm curious to see how that came about.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've also seen some tweets thrown about, some YouTube comments. The ultimate source of all evil in the universe, of course, the YouTube comment section. So that's kind of interesting. It's funny. It's like, so like if I play meta, like I'm totally whoring it up. But if I'm not playing meta, then I'm like dad in the worst way. And I guess for me, it's like, well, I am a dad, so I guess everything I do is the dad loadout. So like 1v1 me, bro.
By the strictest definition, but, you are always running a dad loadout, whether you yes. wanted it or not. You stepped into a war with a dad in the Crucible.
That's right. So let's get to taking out the dads one by one.
If we ever figure out what a dad loadout is, maybe we'll do an episode where we talk about our favorite dad loadouts. But yeah, what we are not here to talk about tonight is all of that. What we are here to talk about is Season of the Opulence. What was originally known as Penumbra, or the Season of the Shadow, is now Season of Opulence. It seems to be focused very, very heavily on the Leviathan, on Kallus once more. As many of you remember, spoilers here, we did leave off his story with us having repulsed a group of Cabal that were trying to destroy his ship, poor Kallus. He was very grateful to us. He seems to find us very interesting. I would say he's enamored to us. There was talk that perhaps we would be invited to become one of his shadows, if you guys know the lore behind that. That would be very, very impressive. We would be the shadow for humanity, basically. But besides that, we've got a ton of new stuff. We have a new 6-player matchmade activity. It's called the Menagerie. And this is going to be a first, I believe, for Destiny, and that it is a 6-player PvE matchmade activity.
Yeah, that's something new.
And obviously we have the Reckoning, which is a 4-player matchmade activity.
Right.
So, and we've had previously had Strikes, which are 3-player matchmade activities. So you can see that they're now stepping up. And this is the closest, I believe, and I'm not 100% certain on it because I have not played it, but it does say that there are new challenges. It says that there are different paths and enemies. Some of the clips that that are being shown look like someone is holding a ball, so it's conceivable there are mechanics. So this could be the closest to a raid that we've ever had, in a match-made raid that we've ever had in Destiny, which would be awesome, in my opinion, because I've been preaching that I think matchmaking needs to be in all activities for quite some time. I don't think necessarily that the raid should be designed around matchmaking in terms of difficulty, because I think that realistically what matchmaking would do best is show players, holy shit, this is pretty hard. I probably should go ahead and get an organized fire team, but man, it was fun even though we had no idea what we're doing. That's what I would hope matchmaking would do. But it's going to be very interesting to see how it works out for Menagerie.
Yeah, I'm excited about that as well. I sort of wonder if they're kind of giving the 6-player matchmade activity with mechanics a test run in Menagerie, and then maybe we'll see it, you know, if it goes really well, maybe we'll see it in a future raid. That could be reading a little too much into it, but we can certainly be hopeful, because that is certainly something that would make raiding feel more accessible to a larger percentage of the population. It's always been something that's kind of a more niche activity in Destiny, which is interesting because it certainly takes up a lot of development time to build and design and test those raids. So they're making a big commitment to put something out there for a very small percentage of dedicated players. Perhaps the Menagerie will open up that type of activity to a wider subset of the population.
Well, we saw they're making a concerted effort to bring in-game activities to the players who have been steadfastly either refusing or unable to find a full six-man fire team. Obviously, Shattered Throne was capable of being done solo.
Yep.
Whisper, after a period of time, was capable of being done solo, but it was able to be done in a three-man. And it was in a public space, so you could find other people very easily. Zero Hour is also a three-man activity. So, and those are all what I would consider in-game.
Right.
I would very much consider them in-game activities. So they are making an effort to include the non-six-man fire teams in these in-game activities. And I think the completion numbers for those activities speak for themselves. That if it were maybe a little bit easier to get players together for a six-man activity like a raid, we may see the completion numbers go up. I think right now they're hovering at around 10% of players. And that's probably 10% of active players. It's probably closer to 1% of the overall players who have ever played the game. But the fact of the matter is, you're correct. Raids take up a lot of time and a lot of development horsepower. But without raids, that angel or that star on top of the tree, the angel on top of the tree, the cherry on top, whatever you want to call it, disappears for a lot of players. And despite the fact that, you know, only 1 out of 10 players may complete the raid, a lot of players who don't complete the raid are still looking up at it like, one day.
Right.
One day I'm going to get there. One day I'm going to figure it out. My suggestion for raid matchmaking has always been focused around improving the guided game system. We talked about this a little bit before the podcast, but improving the guided game system to offer a little bit more variety, to offer much better rewards for the guides, and also to make it a better experience where instead of guiding for the entire raid, you would guide checkpoints. So you would guide the first encounter, the second encounter, the third encounter, right? And to get up the encounters, you would have to have beaten the previous encounter to then unlock the ability to learn or to teach the next one. You know, we spoke earlier and I said what I'd like to see is instead of just, you know, looking, instead of being a guide and being like a searcher, one of the people who's like, oh, I just really want to be guided through it, I would also like to see a quickest option for those people who just really don't care and just want to use it like matchmaking. I would also like to see an option that says my own skill level. And this is like what we talked about in trials last week, where I would like to see it try to match you up with people who have a similar number of completions that you do. So, you know, every once in a while, there are people out there who like to go in with a group that's about the same experience as them and try to learn on their own. I myself personally always do that. When I go into a raid for the first time, I like to go into a raid with a bunch of other people who also don't know what they're doing so that we can try to figure it out because that's what makes it fun. And if obviously, you know, we're not looking to be in there for 10 hours. So if we can't figure it out after the first few run throughs, we'll look up a guide, but it's still really fun to learn things that way. And so, you know, simultaneously, once I've done the raid 10 times, I no longer want to really find a group that doesn't know what they're doing. I want to find another group of people who have run it 10 times who know what they're doing.
Right.
And I'm not really looking at Sherpa anyone. I'm just looking to complete it. So I'd like to see those options added in to make it more like realistic matchmaking. And then, like I said, the ability to, instead of having to commit to an entire raid, you just say, hey, you know, I'd really like to learn the first encounter tonight. And I think it would make it a lot more bite-sized. I think it'd make it a lot more manageable. And people wouldn't be necessarily so scared. And then the final part of that process is whatever the rewards are for the guides, they got to be great. You know, guides have to basically be getting like in-game level loot for being guides. But being a guide should only open once you've completed a certain number of, you know, activities. So if you've completed a raid 4 or 5 times, yeah, okay, you can be a guide. If you've never completed the raid, you can't queue up to be a guide.
Right, exactly.
You know, I'd like to see that limit put on there too.
Yeah, this is something that I've done some thinking about as well, both in the context of the trials episode last week and also in terms of raids and other, you know, maybe nightfalls, even other kind of in-game-esque activities, although nightfalls right now I don't know if they fully fall into that category or not.
Nightfalls are a joke. They're almost easier than heroic strikes most of the time.
Yeah. But if they ever, again, become like an in-game activity, and as well as, you know, any other in-game activities Bungie kind of throws in where they might look to do matchmaking. I also feel that the guided game system needs a serious overhaul. I think Destiny would benefit strongly from an in-game matchmaking system. I know that we've got 1,000,001 third-party LFGs. A lot of people don't want to try to figure out which one is the best one for them. A lot of people still don't know about them and may never know about them because when they're playing, they're on their console and they don't also have a laptop out, or they aren't also on their phone saying, how do I find a team in Destiny? They're just in the game saying, how do I find a team in Destiny? And Destiny is saying, new phone, who dis? There's just nothing. There's nothing there. Aside from randomly messaging strangers, which I'm going to be honest.
We've all been there. We've all done that. In desperate times.
I respond to those messages about the same way that I respond to phone numbers that I don't recognize. Which is to say, I don't. I'm not a player who likes to jump in with a completely random stranger. I'm a little put off by the guts that it takes to message somebody totally random. And I'm also a little put off because I know that you're messaging literally everybody in the tower. And I know this because the other people in my fire team got the exact same message at the exact same time. The tools that are currently there, especially on console, chat is a little easier on PC, because on console it's kind of a pain in the butt unless you're doing it through your phone, and even then, kind of a pain in the butt. The tools that are there are insufficient to the task. They want this to be a social game, and I feel like they didn't put any of the social stuff actually into the game. So, I'm really happy that they've got matchmaking on this six-player activity. To what you said, I think that it's something that needs to be at the forefront. I think Guided Games needs to have both requirements and some kind of a scorecard that a seeker or other interested party can see before accepting. They can say, oh, this clan has 50 completions. Okay. And you know, or they've got 50 completions with a seeker. So they actually got somebody in and actually got them through 50 times. That's fantastic. I want to run with these guys. These guys have 0 completions with a seeker. Well, okay, maybe I'll give them a chance. Or I'm super, super all thumbs. I do not want to deal with somebody who's just learning how to teach this. Certainly that rewards the clans that get in there first, but on the other hand, it also, that's not a bad thing. It rewards the clans that are prepared, that are on the ball, that are getting people through a lot. And those players deserve, like you said, they deserve meaningful rewards that make it worth their time to teach people. That's kind of my two cents on matchmaking. Let's get back to Opulence, though. We're way off on one of our usual tangents.
Well, at least this time the tangents had a relation to what we were talking about, since they did put in a matchmaking activity. It's not like we just pulled that out of our butts and went off talking about it for 15 minutes. At least this time we had some relation to it. So the Menagerie, there are 3 panels underneath it that shows. One is Leviathan Secret, says confront new challenges on an unexplored deck of Kallus's massive ship. So that's pretty much just telling us what we already know. It's going to be on the Leviathan. We're very excited about that. Treasure awaits. Upgrade the Chalice of Opulence to better refine which gear you earn. Better refine. So the key word there to me is that it doesn't say choose. It says refine.
Right.
Which to me implies narrowing down your options, but doesn't necessarily say directly choose what it is that you want to win. But above it, it shows 12 symbols. There's 3 blue hexagons, it looks like, 3 red octagons, 2 green diamonds, and then 3 green diamonds, and then 3 purple circles, for a total of 12 characters. Each one has a little symbol on it. And the symbols design reminds me a lot of the symbols that were obviously in the initial Leviathan raid. But this time they're on what appears to be gemstones. So I'm not sure if there's going to be some alignment of those things or some charging of the gems. But it does. I'm hoping each one of those stands for an encounter, is what I'm hoping. Because if there's that many encounters, it could be a lot of variety.
Yeah.
Which leads me to the next thing. It says replayability. Carve your way through ever-changing paths and enemies. So I'm really, really hoping that it's something like that. That there's just a bunch of different activities and, you know, somehow upgrading your chalice will allow you to pick the gear. Because what we went from is we went from Black Armory, which was probably one of the best gear farms we've ever had in Destiny, to Season of the Drifter and the Reckoning, which is probably one of the worst gear farms we've ever had in Destiny.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this leans a lot harder towards Black Armory.
Well, one of the things that I like that I'm seeing here is that there's some talk about taking this, like assembling this chalice, and then I think I saw some talk somewhere, maybe it was in the trailer, that you have to like configure it, or you have to do something, you have to make some choices, either before or during this activity, and those choices are going to affect your drops. So I like that they're giving us something that's at least partly deterministic. We have direct influence over our rewards. That to me, frankly, means more fun. If I can go in and I can, we don't know how they're going to let us narrow it down, but if I can go in and I can say, okay, I'm looking for armor, or you know, I need to get, you know, either legs or a cloak right now. That's going to be what's going to help me power up the most. Or right now, I need a power weapon. That's what's going to help me. If we can do something along those lines, I think this is going to be a phenomenal activity. And like you said, with 12 symbols, hopefully each of those is representing an encounter. Maybe some of them represent encounters and some modifiers. We don't really have any particular clue right now. But yeah, it looks like there's going to be a lot of variety, and that means a lot of replayability. So I'm pretty excited about the Menagerie overall. The only thing that I think is maybe a little concerning is that it does appear that there are some mechanics going on, and completing mechanics in a match-made team can be a little bit hectic, as we've seen in a number of activities throughout Destiny 1 and Destiny 2. The Court of Oryx actually comes to mind for me back in Destiny 1. And there were times when if you were on patrol and you were in there, it could just be a complete cluster. Everybody trying to do the mechanic at the same time, or nobody trying to do the mechanic except you. And it could occasionally be very difficult. Now, toward the end of that kind of period, everybody understood it, everybody got it, it got easier, and that will happen with the Menagerie as well over time as our collective intelligence in terms of how to complete the activity increases. But going in solo could be a very difficult choice at the beginning. That's the one thing that I guess maybe isn't necessarily concerning, but just like something I'm thinking about right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking of mechanics, there is a new raid. And for the first time in Destiny 2, the raid is going to be basically available to everyone on day one. It's a 6-hour delay from the drop of Season of Opulence to the new raid called Crown of Sorrow. It is in the underbelly of the Leviathan. They have set what they're calling, I believe, contest mode on.
Yep.
Which means that you are locked at a maximum possible light level. No matter if you're 10 above it or 20 above it or 30 above it, you only count as whatever the light level is for the encounter. So 700 for the first encounter, 720 for the last encounter. Doesn't matter if you're 750 going in there, it's going to play like you're 720. It's evening the playing field, so to speak. This is something that I am a huge, huge fan of. I wish they hadn't done it this particular way, because I still think that the raid needs to be an in-game activity, and putting the final power level at 720 by definition means it's not really an in-game activity. What I would have liked to have seen is the raid to have come out a week or 2 weeks even after release, with all this build-up and all this hype, maybe on a nice Friday evening or something like that, maybe a Friday morning. And by that point in time, I would have liked to have seen a much softer power climb to where pretty much everyone was at max power. That's what I would have liked to have seen. But this, in my opinion, is the second best thing, and I will 100% take it, because for the first time in the history of Destiny, I'm going to be trying to compete in the raid race day one. I'm not going to win. I'm not going to do shit at all, but I'm certainly going to be trying to play. I'm going to try to beat it. I'll be right there with everyone else. I think we're going to see a huge surge in day one raid participation, which is hilarious compared to Forsaken, when it was probably the lowest day one participation of any raid in history. Yeah.
No, I think this is also, I also think this is a fantastic thing for the game, for the community. I think Bungie has really listened to what people are looking for. And while they may not always give us exactly what we want or everything we want, I think in this case, they have taken steps to meet the needs that people are putting out there in terms of the raid race. And I'm really happy about it. I have been burning PTO left and right like crazy this year, and I will not be taking off time for this. Unfortunately, I would like to, but I will certainly have Twitch up and be watching. So I'm very excited. Make sure you stream, man. I will. I'll throw you up in a tab here and let you know how far behind you are.
I don't know if I can stream. I have a pretty disgustingly filthy mouth. As anyone who's actually played with me knows, there's a reason why I don't play with random people, and there's a reason why I don't stream. I say some horrible, horrible things when I'm playing and I'm angry at the opponent. So thankfully, I usually am not like that during PvE activities, so I may stream it. You know, I've got, I think, several hundred followers on Twitch that are just following an empty channel because I haven't streamed in years, but maybe it'd be good to put it to the test.
There you go.
Maybe we'll try to build a team and see what we can do. So basically, Season of the Opulence, we talked about the Menagerie, we talked about the raid, but there's actually a lot more stuff coming out. A ton of stuff coming out, some of which we know, some of which we don't.
Well, of course, I mean, we've got a ton of new weapons and new armor that we have the teaser pictures of. We have some info on some new kind of mechanics. It sounds like they're revamping Iron Banner, which is a good thing. It could use a revamp again, and hopefully it'll be a little more fun this go around. They've got some Power Surge. Is it bounties for Power Surge? Is that how it's supposed to work?
I think it's actually going to be a quest.
Oh, that's right.
And it's a quest. You do a quest, and the quest is going to reward you with stuff.
Yes, so that's excellent.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. What was done last time with the Power Surge bounties was great. I think they wanted to try to tie it more into the story this time.
Yeah.
And more into the pursuits, which I'm happy with, because those are a fantastic idea. So one of the ideas I had when I was at Bungie was that there would be a rolling soft cap. And as weeks of the season progressed, the soft cap would get higher and higher and higher until eventually the soft cap is just equivalent to, you know, the max, right? And the idea behind that was to act as like a catch-up mechanic for people who fell behind, because the worst thing that happens is someone falls really far behind. I'm literally talking to one of my clanmates about this right now. He's fallen really far behind in Season of the Drifter. He's barely played at all. And what's happened is I'm like, hey, are we trying to raid day one? He's like, dude, I'm not going to be ready. It's like, well, no, you actually may be ready because Bungie's giving you a way to get ready for this season. And that's something I'm happy, happy, happy to see, because it would suck if he legitimately wanted to raid day one and couldn't because he had to grind light level, which we all know is the most painfully awful pursuit in Destiny.
Yeah, I'm really happy to see that they are kind of doubling down on the catch-up mechanics, because it does make it more fun, even if maybe you've fallen behind on a second or a third character. This just gives you that extra bump to get it leveled up really quickly so that you have the options that you need. So I'm really excited about that because it's going to allow me to catch up. My Titan maybe will actually catch up to the rest of the team for once. We'll see about that.
I'm just happy it's not a pure focus on light level. I hate the light level grind. The light level should never have been made an end game pursuit.
Yeah.
Light level should have always been the middle game. When you finish the story and the initial quest, playing challenging activities, meaning heroic strikes and stuff like that, grants you rewards that make you progress up light level. But light level always should have been, you know, a slope that you walk up, not this sharp cliff face that you have to, you know, climb up brutally. It's just the fact that light level was ever made a focus of the game was one of the worst mistakes. Now, thankfully, we've got so many rewards and so many activities now that, you know, I basically have just played Crucible and I'm at 700. It's, you know, I haven't even put a focus on power climbing at all, and it's happened, but it still isn't exactly a satisfactory feeling.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I always felt like the real end game, especially this was much more true in Destiny 1. The real end game was trying to collect the rolls that you wanted on your weapons and on your armor, trying to get that perfect spec out for the activities that you enjoyed the most. And I really have not been able to do that in Destiny 2 because I'm always trying to grind power level to catch back up. And I can't keep all my characters caught up. And so I can never really feel comfortable just chasing. I want this armor set with these perks. Like I just don't, I don't have that much time in my Destiny week to ever really feel like that can be a pursuit for me. And that's too bad. It's like, I kind of feel like I'm missing out on something that was a lot of fun in Destiny 1. So, but speaking of things that we chase, we've got pinnacle gear. We've got some new weapons that they've given us a little bit of information about. I feel like we should probably talk about those. That's right up our alley. So the Crucible pinnacle weapon is Revoker, a sniper rifle. Missed shots are returned to the magazine after a short duration. How do you feel about that one?
Well, you know me, the way I judge perks is how often I see it affect me.
Right.
How often I see the perk pop up and I notice the perk's effect. This is interesting, right? Because unlike the other pinnacle weapons, which reward a kill or reward precision, this negates the penalty for being imprecise.
Right.
It basically says that once you have ammo, you're either going to get a hit or you're going to keep the ammo. And that's interesting to me. I think it's kind of designed for people who are not, maybe not necessarily the greatest snipers, who have been wary of trying to snipe and are looking to make a break into it. And I think the sniper may be what pushes them into it.
Yeah.
I also think that really good snipers are actually underestimating how much they miss. And I think they will see the benefits of this as well. Because, quite frankly, people are like, oh, it doesn't make the gun better when you get a kill. It doesn't make the gun kill easier. No, it doesn't. But, it's not like it's going to hurt.
Right.
Like, I consider a bad perk to be a perk that can actually change the way you play the weapon in a negative way. Like the Lord of Wolves perk, you actually avoid using it, or you avoid triggering it, or it's so minor that you never even see it activate. This, people are going to see it activate. You're going to see it activate very, very often. You're going to notice that you're getting ammo back when you wouldn't normally have had ammo. And the ammo economy of snipers has always been the weakest of the special weapons because of the fact that they sit so far away that when you kill someone, you're not right next to their ammo brick to pick it up like you would be with a shotgun or a fusion rifle.
Yeah,
So I
exactly.
think it's going to be, especially if it's a, especially if it has a low zoom scope, which it looks like it has ambush from D1, especially if it has great handling speed, especially if it doesn't have bad visual flinch. I mean, they can do all these things kind of like what they did with Borealis, right? Where they just like stacked Borealis stats straight to the roof. So even though the perk is basically useless in PvP, it's still a great PvP sniper just because of how good it feels. And the fact of the matter is, if this sniper is just the best feeling sniper in the game, that alone would make it worthwhile. That alone. And then on top of that, I feel like the perk is just the icing on the cake for the sniper itself. So this is not something that, I saw a lot of people out there like, oh, that's a useless perk, that's bullshit. I don't think so. And I think when we actually get the gun in our hands, if it feels really, really great, then having a perk that returns ammo if you happen to miss is just it's just gravy.
Yeah, I have to agree with everything you said. We've seen they're willing to stack the stats on the pinnacle weapons. They're willing to make them the best feeling or among the best feeling weapons of their kind. I don't think we should expect any less from Revoker. I think it's going to be a really, really crisp sniper. And I think people are going to like the way it feels. And I think, like you said, I think a lot of people probably underestimate how much they miss. And I think the other point that you made is really worth reiterating. This is a sniper rifle that is going to encourage people to try sniping who otherwise might feel like the barrier to entry is a little too painful. You know, I would take this sniper out. If it feels great, if the stats are great and the scope is friendly and the flinch is not abysmal, I would take this out because I know I'm going to miss some shots. I know I'm going to miss a lot of shots. And if I'm not punished for that and I have a chance to kind of learn from those mistakes without constantly dying, you know, yeah, that sounds fantastic. That sounds like a weapon worth having. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a really exciting chase weapon once people see the stats. Assuming Bungie follows through, we can't know for sure. We can just have faith. Next up, we've got the Wendigo GL3. This is the Vanguard pinnacle weapon. It's a grenade launcher. Orbs of light increase blast radius and damage. I think this is them pushing us to use grenade launchers more heavily in PvE. Which, I mean, you know, we do need some more DPS weapons, and this could certainly fit that bill, depending on how much effect orbs of light have, how much it stacks. So yeah, I mean, I think for me, that looks like a weapon that's going to be interesting, and I'm going to be really curious to see once the you know, the streamers and the no lifers, no offense, the people who have time to get it day one or day two, once they start posting some videos and some info on it, I'm going to be really curious to see if it's worth my time.
Yeah, I'm sure Bungie did the math on it and has made this, or is attempting to make this one of the best heavy DPS weapons in the game. For the longest time, up until basically Outbreak Perfected came out, heavy weapons were the DPS choice. Exotics, in particular.
As I think they should be, but...
Yeah, be it Darcy or Whisper or Thunderlord or Wardcliffe, there really wasn't another option other than the exotic heavies. The problem wasn't necessarily that they were the best, it was how much they were the best by.
Yeah.
They were so far and away better than everything else that you were directly handicapping yourself and thus handicapping your team if you weren't using one. That was a problem. Outbreak Perfected has partially solved that problem. And it looks like Wendigo GL3 is another attempt to partially solve that problem. It's to give legendaries a little bit of a leg up to put it closer to something like a Wardcliffe Coil or like the Prospector. Not quite surpass it because it is still a legendary, but if you're closer to it, you're not handicapping yourself as much. You can feel a lot better about maybe running Outbreak Perfected or maybe running, you know, one of the other exotic non-heavy weapons.
Yeah, and this is going to be a perk that's going to be super easy to trigger in DPS situations. You know, whether somebody's throwing a sword into the ground, dropping a tether, there's so many easy ways to just drop orbs right on the pile that you're doing DPS from. And, I mean, it's going to be... I don't know. I think if the damage is there, it's going to be so easy to use. That it's going to see a lot of play. So that's, for me, I think that might be the best Vanguard pinnacle weapon I've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Oxygen was just... Oxygen could have been good. It unfortunately suffers from the fact that all Scout Rifles are suffering right now. I think if Scout Rifles were better, Oxygen would have been a fantastic gun. I would have loved to have used it in PvP, but Scout Rifles are terrible.
Yeah.
Scout Rifles are even terrible in PvE. You know, Loaded Question, they did okay. It probably needs a little bit more. I think at that point, they were a little bit scared of making stuff really, really strong. With good reason, because you saw what happened when they made Luna's Howl really strong, and you're going to see what happened because they made Recluse really strong as soon as Luna's Howl gets nerfed.
Yeah.
And I think they were a little bit wary of doing it, and now it seems like they're realizing, like, no, these are pinnacle weapons, they need to be really, really great for what they do. I actually think the Wendigo is getting overlooked a little bit as a PvP tool.
Okay.
Because Orbs of Light are actually really common in PvP. And heavy grenade launchers, and we don't know if it has Procstead or not, but heavy grenade launchers with Procstead are already exceptionally good. If it increases the blast radius when you just pick up an orb of light and that timer is more than just a few seconds, it is going to be a very, very easy heavy weapon to use. I'm thinking perhaps along the lines of like rocket launcher easy. So we'll see. And obviously that's just speculation on my part. I don't know for a fact whether or not it's going to function that way in PvP. Maybe it doesn't have proc stat and it's just not really worth it. But if it does, then I would say maybe keep an eye out for it and maybe go collect some heavy bricks and give it a shot there too.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way, but there are orbs all over the place in PvP these days, along with supers all over the place. So yeah, that's certainly a worthwhile strategy to keep an eye on. The last weapon, the Gambit Pinnacle Weapon, Hush. Hip-fired precision shots give a massive draw speed bonus. For me, at face value, I don't know that I want that bow. And I kind of like bows, so I don't know. I'm a little thrown by what the quote-unquote fantasy is here that they're trying to hit. I guess if you want to be Legolas.
I think it's Arrow from the DC TV show, where you hit your first shot firing from the hip, as he often does, and then all of your consecutive shots are almost immediate. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, you hop into an engagement, you plug the first enemy close to you with a hip-fire precision hit, and then you just... It doesn't say precision kill.
It's true.
So it may even be functional against bosses, against yellow bars. Every precision hit gives a massive draw speed bonus, and then everyone after that is just lethal and quick. So I'm hoping that this is going to be a great yellow bar slayer. Maybe it's pretty great for boss DPS, for a primary at least. I'm personally hoping, because I've never actually found it super difficult to hit hipfire precision shots with bows. It's probably the only gun besides the last word that I feel like functions well hip firing. But I would like to see how long that timer lasts for PvP, because the biggest problem with bows is that obviously one headshot is most times not enough.
Sure.
If you can very quickly fire off two headshots with a bow, bows are really easy to get precision hits with. Or even one headshot and a body shot, because usually that'll be enough. Or even just two body shots would be enough. You hit a hip fire precision shot and then get a super fast body shot follow up. I mean, I'm thinking that could be great, but you know, the fact of the matter is these things may sound underwhelming, but it's because we haven't been given numbers. We don't know the effectiveness of said perks.
Yeah.
I think based on what they did with Recluse, what they did with Lunas Howl, they're going to, you know, put the pedal to the metal. They're going to just stick it to the wall and say, these things are going to be good. Because what's the worst that happens? We break the game. It's like, well, you know, it's been broken before.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm excited about all three of these. Actually, I think this is actually going to be the first season that I have said, you know what? I need to get all three of those.
Well, it sounds like I need to up my hip firing bow game, because that's really not something that I've put a whole lot of effort into. For the most part, I always ADS with my bow, so.
Bows are a bit counterintuitive. It's the same thing with Trinity Ghoul.
Yeah.
I was saying that, you know, people think you need to fire all three of those little lightning bolts close to each other. No, you need to let them spread out a little bit so they can chain the lightning between them. It's just, you know, bows are probably one of my favorite feeling weapons in the game. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, I really want a special ammo bow that can one hit to the head. You know, at the cost of obviously a lot less aim assist, but I would love that. That would be, I don't think I would ever take it off if there's a bow that could do that. And then a heavy ammo bow that one hits to the body. That would be like, oh God. Moist just thinking about it.
As long as the kill animation like pins the guardian to the wall or something, I think that would be...
Of course.
I think that would be all right with me.
Like Hela from Thor Ragnarok, where she like throws the dagger into someone. It would be like that. I shouldn't say someone because he's a main character, but not a main character. He's a supporting character, but he is named, but I don't remember his name right now. But it was the Japanese Viking is the guy who she does that to, I'm pretty sure.
Point being, I'd like to see some ragdoll physics of guardians being pinned to walls by arrows. That's something that I feel like is missing from the game. Bungie, please. So that's the pinnacle weapons. And then I guess if we just want to keep rolling down that Season of Opulence page, we've got the Solstice of Heroes coming this summer. So that's kind of the recurring. Let's look back at the year of Destiny and see what all we've accomplished and maybe go back and finish up anything we haven't.
And they're going to give us some moments of triumph again, which is always fun. I always love seeing the moments of triumph. It's really enjoyable to do that stuff. But, you know, that's the main things that they're focused on. But we still have the gameplay calendar. And as they pointed out, Season of Opulence is finishing up the gameplay calendar. So we've got at least two exotic quests. We know them. One of them is going to be Truth, which is coming out June 11th. Super happy about that, I hope. And I don't think it will. But I hope it has two rockets in the magazine. If it has two shots in the magazine, I'm going to be so, so happy. And then there's also the Lumina quest, which has been, it's been, you know, bandied about, kind of rumored that it may be a rose, which is what Thorn was before it was corrupted by Dredge and Yor. So we'll see if that's the case, if it really is. It kind of looks like it. Kind of looks pretty. And there is a, like, kind of plain-looking gun amongst all the gold and jewel-crusted pieces that are shown to us. There's one very, very plain-looking hand cannon. So I wonder if it has anything to do with that. But I believe one of those quests, probably the Lumia quest or the Lumina quest, is for annual pass holders only.
Right.
And then the Truth quest is for everyone, anyone who's still playing. There is obviously new triumphs and lore books. There's a power increase for everyone. New vanity rewards from Eververse. Obviously, there's a lot of Eververse changes coming through. They're trying to make it a lot more friendly, a lot less loot boxy. I think they're seeing on the writing on the walls that loot boxes that are paid for are going to go away. And so they're doing direct purchases with silver, which is something they've shied away from before. You know, obviously, we already talked about Iron Banner coming back. And then for the people who own the annual pass, we already spoke about the Menagerie, that exotic quest for Lumina. New triumphs and lore books for us, a new raid. There's obviously the Menagerie weapons and gear, which I believe are the ones that they showed us that are the ones covered in jewels. It looks like there are a bunch of old models. For instance, we have the Aya's Luna model. We have what looks like the LDR 5001 model, the Eternity's Edge Warlock Sword model. What looks like, is it Drang and Mida Mini Tool are up there as well, just encrusted in jewels?
I closed it. Let me go back to it.
And Skull Splitter, I think. I think Skull Splitter is there too, and it looks like the Saint 14 shotgun. So it looks like a bunch of old models that are coming back, but with some very, very significant, you know, facelifts basically on them. And then we've got a ton of armor. The armor is some of the best looking armor I've seen. Just very gold, very... very gemstone-y. I'm really excited about it. But we also have something called the Penumbral Chalice, which is the last thing listed on the annual pass content. It's in purple, and I'm interested to see what that is. I don't know if that's the chalice that was spoken about, which is referred to as the Chalice of Opulence for the Menagerie, but it doesn't seem like it. It seems like Penumbral Chalice and Chalice of Opulence may be two separate things. So I'm wondering if Penumbral Chalice is like a heroic mode, or something like that, or yeah, I would say that's probably what it is, right? It's probably the heroic mode.
Well, so it's interesting. I can't remember if this was at the beginning of the podcast or before the podcast, but you said something about possibly part of the storyline here is that maybe we'll get selected to be Kallus's shadow or shadows. The shadows for Earth or for humanity. And Penumbra, of course, means shadow, if you translate it to English. So this would be the shadowed chalice or the chalice of shadow, depending on how you want to say it. And given, of course, what the shadows are, this to me feels like some kind of in-game story event that's going to take place toward the end of the summer, leading up to the next season, which is, of course, unannounced. So that's my theory, is that there's going to be some kind of a story event ending with the Guardian becoming Kallus's shadow. Or perhaps killing Kallus and saying, no more shadows. I don't know. You never know what's going to happen. As we saw with, or as we've seen with so many storylines, they're willing to go some places now in Destiny 2 that they weren't before, and it's hard to predict exactly how it might play out. But I think it's a safe bet that they're going to follow up on the lore that they've given us about Kallus with some in-game story. That's where I'm going to put my bet. Now, one thing, honestly, I'm really happy about all of this. I'm really excited about it. And I want to come back to something you said before the podcast about the way that the annual pass has worked out for Bungie and for us as players. But I have to briefly offer a moment of criticism. In an otherwise, I guess, very satisfied podcast, a podcast where I'm overall extremely happy with the way things are. One thing that I do not see mentioned on here at all is new Crucible maps.
Yep.
And new Crucible maps is something that they said we would get every single season. This was in the TWAB on June 7th of last year. They said every season in the annual pass we would get new Crucible maps. And we have not.
It has been extremely, extremely disappointing as a mainly Crucible player that, you know, and I know how the Vanguard players feel. They haven't gotten new strikes either, but good Lord, man, a Crucible map that is new would do wonders to spice up how Crucible feels right now, which is stale, stale, stale. So it hurts my soul. Even some brought back maps, right?
Yeah.
Like how they brought back Pantheon into Convergence. Like, give us some old maps that are being rehashed. I'll take it, man. Come on.
There are so many maps that bring back memories from D1. I would love to see updated graphics on. You know, in terms of the time to put those out, maybe it's a little bit less because you're not starting from scratch. You know, heck, at this point, I would take versions of Gambit maps that have maybe been updated a little bit for Crucible just to see some variety. You know, it would be really nice to see some new maps in there. I also have to say that I haven't played a whole lot of Strikes this season, but I have heard from people that they're repeating a lot still, that they're seeing a lot of the same few strikes over and over again. So quality of life note maybe for future seasons, because I have a couple of Vanguard quests piled up. I'm going to have to run some strikes. And Lord help me if I have to run the strike where I have to throw the ball at everybody or pass the ball to my matchmade teammates and watch them throw it off a cliff 17 times out of 50. I'm going to have to buy a new controller. So, but other than that, I'm extremely happy with the way that this looks, with what we've got coming up and with what we've got coming out of Season of Opulence. I want to go back and maybe finish on the note that you had made, I think, again, before the podcast. The annual pass has worked out really, really well in terms of a continuous stream of new content and new things to do. Not all of it has appealed to all players. Certain groups of the player base, perhaps, have felt neglected and have not felt that there has been much of anything that has been for them. But you can't argue that there hasn't been content, because there has been a buttload of content that has come out. There has been something going on almost every week or every other week for the entirety of the annual pass. There's so much that if you're not a hardcore player, if you're not putting in at least, 20 hours week in and week out, you probably still have quests that you have not finished. You probably have a bunch of triumphs that you could go and chase that are even still in your wheelhouse. Maybe you're not a PvP player. You probably still have a ton of triumphs. Maybe you are a PvP player. Pretty fair bet you probably still have some triumphs that you could go and knock out. So there's a lot of stuff to do. I think Bungie has delivered on that promise, and I have to applaud them for it.
Yeah, I was saying this earlier for a fact. I find the annual pass to have been well worth the $30 I spent. I would say that it was cheaper than paying for two DLCs, and overall, we have gotten more content and more enjoyable content than we gotten out of any two previous DLCs. We still ended up with two raids. We ended up with like a firefights-esque activity in each in each version that has come out, they've brought us another Firefight-esque activity. New loot sets, or at least one new loot set. I'm still missing things like the vendor resets. I really, 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 really would like the vendors to go back to being vendors. That's been disappointing, especially because there's, 400 weapons in the game that don't even get touched because they're all year one weapons or, without random rolls. So that's very disappointing to me. But that aside, I would absolutely say that the annual pass has been a success overall. There were some rough spots. They've obviously learned lessons. With the rollout of Black Armory, the rollout of Season of the Drifter was much more smooth. With the weapon farm of Black Armory, somehow they went backwards on that for Season of the Drifter, but it looks like they're reverting back to a more deterministic style, which is good. So you can tell that they've been experimenting, that they've been trying to figure out the best way to do this, but I do think that going forward, something like an annual pass, if we were to get an annual pass per year, I think the seasonal droughts that we had in D1 would be a thing of the past, and I'd be very happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree with you. The endless memes about droughts from Destiny 1 are not something that you see now. Reddit never runs out of things to be salty about, but one thing I have not seen is complaints about a lack of content. And so I think, we can soundly put that complaint to bed and say Bungie's got that figured out. Now it's just a matter of, can they deliver the content that they promise? And can they deliver new and interesting content? And can they also deliver, the quality of life updates that we like to see? So, some of those things are still works in progress. But overall, I do feel really good about the state of the game. Like I said at the beginning of this part of this episode, I have a whole bunch of quests lined up, and I just have to decide the right order to do them in. And it's kind of nice that I feel like going into Opulence, I'm not going to be pressured to power level, and I'll kind of be able to play the game my way to a certain extent. Maybe that means I don't dive into Menagerie right away. I've already said I'm not going to be trying to raid day one, so I don't have to worry too much about rushing into that. And because I've got so much stuff stacked up, like it's kind of like going to be the most relaxed season of Destiny for me. And I'm really looking forward to that. And then we've got Solstice of Heroes coming, and who knows, maybe they'll bring back all the year one weapons. Maybe we'll have just piles and piles of random rolls to sort through, and that'll be an exciting time for us as a podcast. So lots to look forward to.
All right. So, that is it for this episode, I believe, but we do have two podcast reviews that we're going to read out from iTunes. We actually maybe have more than that. I, for some reason, feel like I got one from someone out of the United States, but now I cannot find it. I'm going to look for it. I am biding my time. Yes, we did. We got one from Australia, is what it was. Nice. He says, best D2 podcast, 5 stars. Great show. I look forward to listening every week. I've dropped off every other Destiny podcast because these guys cover it all. If I had one issue with it, it's the lack of love for Warlocks. And that's from Gimbok via Australia. And that was on the 24th that he sent that to us. So thank you very much, Gimbok. We appreciate it. And I know that we are not the most loving people when it comes to our Warlock brethren, but we are trying. God knows we are trying. We are putting every bit of extra time and effort into... I can't say that. But I am trying to play my Warlock more often than I did prior to the Warlock episode. So it's definitely something we're working on. But thank you for the review. Then we've got Breaking Down the Recent Changes by Trigger Blade X. This was from May 21st. It says 5 stars. I've listened to your podcast for a while now. Can't remember when I started. But when it comes to PvP, you guys are a great source for that info. While I do wish you talked about PvE perks more, I feel like you expressed my opinion on the nerf better than I could ever say it without my spit turning to venom, and I appreciate hearing it. You are great guys, and the knowledge you give for PvP is invaluable to me when I'm trying to have fun in the Crucible when I play in there from time to time. Thank you very much, TriggerBladeX. I know that we should probably make an effort to talk more about PvP, but it's just not where my heart's at. I feel like whenever I know something is good for PvP, I make an effort to mention it, though. And I do that, and I will continue to do that. And maybe I will even look for more opportunities where I could bring PvE up, despite the fact that 95% of my time in the game is spent in Crucible.
Yeah, and that's something I used to be much more into the PvE side of the game. And as it does, life has changed, and my ability to play with a lot of the people I used to play with has diminished due to work and life just kind of shifting the time that I play the game. So I have been playing a lot more. I've been playing a lot more PvP and maybe Gambit, but I kind of count that as like a sort of PvP type activity versus standard PvE. So I've strayed away from that as well. But again, yeah, I do try to point it out when I think there's something good. We probably could stand to go back and review the perks from Season of the Drifter as in terms of their PvE benefits. There's definitely some perks worth discussing. This was called out in Discord as well, which is why I feel like I kind of needed to elaborate on it a little bit here. It had some people there pointing out that we kind of had missed really breaking those perks down. And that's a fair criticism. That's something that we normally in the past would have covered. I don't think there was a lot of call for it. I don't think either of us was very interested to be.
Well, it came down to the fact that I really didn't like either of the activities that those guns came from. And I didn't see any of those guns as being something that I thought would add to my armory. Like, I looked at all the guns and I was like, I really don't feel like I need any of these weapons. I'm not super interested in the pulse rifle, which is the one that I thought may have grabbed my attention. I wasn't really into it, and I didn't like either of the activities. I'm not a fan of the Reckoning. I'm not a fan of Gambit Prime. So I was kind of like putting myself through the farm to get those guns, to get them with the perks that I need. It was just sounded like a nightmare to me, honestly. So I didn't really want to do it. I was kind of hoping just nobody noticed, but it looks like some people did, which, by the way, speaking of the Discord, had some fantastic discussions in the Discord this week. I don't know if it has just been the Trials episode bringing up old memories or what, but some of the discussions that we've been having in the podcast discussion channel and even in the lobby have just been absolutely fantastic, to the point where I've been checking back in during work hours when I normally would not be checking back in just because I wanted to keep them going. So shout out to the Discord crew. You guys are awesome as always. And if you would like to join the Discord, there's a link on our Twitter and on my Twitter and on the website and on everything else like that. But we do have one more review. This one is from JMO Games. He says, my new favorite Destiny podcast was on Thursday last week. 5 stars. I only recently found you guys, and I absolutely love the show so far. I always find myself debating and replying to your guys' discussions, even though I know you can't hear me. My wife thinks I'm crazy for that, by the way. Also, it's awesome to know that Merc is in Jack's Beach. I live in Tennessee now, but I am from the Jack's area and would absolutely love to maybe grab a brew with you next time I'm in town. Thanks again for keeping me abreast of what's going on in the Destiny world and giving me a reason to even turn my car radio on the way to work. Well, JMO Games, you don't have to maybe grab a brew with me the next time you're in town. You absolutely can. You are welcome to hit me up on Twitter or on the Discord. And I know you say that your wife thinks you're crazy for debating and replying to our discussions, but if you would like to do that, we have a channel in the Discord just for that. It is literally the podcast discussions channel. I just mentioned it. Please join the Discord. Join our discussion. Don't debate out loud so that your wife thinks you're crazy. Debate us in the Discord. You're more than welcome to do it, and we would love to hear from you. And definitely hit me up next time you're in Jacksonville, because I love beer and I would love to grab a beer with you.
Nice. Yeah.
I think that's it for the reviews. So,
all right. I think that brings us to the close of episode 120 of the Massive Breakdown podcast. Thanks for listening. I want to throw a quick shout out to our sponsors, Goose and Zen SoCal. Thank you so much. These Guardians contribute significantly to the financial well-being of the podcast, and we really appreciate it. As we do all of our patrons and all of you listening out there, you guys make this the podcast that it is today. And thank you so much.
And remember, guys, if you are a patron, let us know in the Patrons Lounge what you would like to hear about this upcoming month on the In Real Life podcast. We'll be filming another one of those. I think we threw a couple of ideas out last time. Talk about favorite beverages, talk about work, talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, talk about the Arrowverse on TV. I think we threw all of those out as suggestions, so why don't we make it multiple choice? Why don't you guys pick which one of those things you would like to hear us talk about, and that will be the subject of the next In Real Life podcast, which, if you guys remember, because we hit a patron pledge level, we are doing the In Real Life podcast for everyone to listen to, not just for patrons, but if you enjoy the In Real Life podcast, it is 100% because of the patrons pledging, so you have them to thank for that extra little bit of our voices that you get to hear each month.
Absolutely, and I'm excited to do it. It's going to be fun. Whatever they pick. So that, I think, is it for me.
All right, guys. We will see you next week then. Bye.
Peace.
What will you find in the Emperor's lost vaults? Treasure hunts will lead you to powerful weapons and armor. These will quickly boost your power level and prepare you for the menagerie. This season's all-new six-player match-made activity. Grow strong, Guardian. Prove your worth.